Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 192 for March 17th, 2014. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Buddy Brannon.
And I'm Alina Roberts.
So, Triple Click invades Serotalk minus Mr. Panarese.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
I guess we could route this podcast to the Triple Click feed, you know, like 192.168.1.1 or whatever. It's fun to play with podcast numbers. It's just, it's interesting.
And IP addresses.
Yes.
Yes, those two.
Now, when IPv6 finally takes, you know, we were supposed to have run out of IPv4 addresses like a year ago. So what happened with that? I mean, like, we're supposed to run out of those and we were all supposed to go IPv6, but I see it still hasn't happened. So, yeah, we're not going to be able to make that joke for very much longer unless they stretch it out some more and we still don't have IPv6 and
you know, IPv6 isn't around, but 7.1 finally dropped.
It did.
It sure enough did, yes.
What do you think of this new fancy update?
As I talked with Buddy about on the last podcast, I am thrilled that the bug has been fixed for me at least. Where if I'm typing a message and my thumb strays up into the message area from the keyboard, my cursor does not jump all over creation.
Yay!
It actually stays put, yes.
And they also fixed the double screen locked messages and they fixed the volume thing.
Yes. No longer do I change the volume when I'm listening to my book or my music and then have it say screen locked 3 seconds later.
Or have it where you change your volume and you can't go back up.
Yes. I am still seeing the bug, though, that when you start playing music or a book in Bard especially, I'll have to turn the speech off and voiceover to get it to bring me back to my volume level that it actually should be at.
Yeah.
So I need to report that one.
Yeah, sometimes it ducks but then forgets to come back up.
To unduck.
Right. Yeah, the other way that you can do that, though, is make it say one more thing.
Yes.
And then it'll come back up.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I've seen that. It's still a bug. Although, you know, some people are saying that, by way of full disclosure, I have no love for web browsing on touchscreen devices.
Right.
But people are saying that focus still is not consistent on Safari.
Okay.
Some people have run into a bug with Bluetooth keyboards. I have not yet.
Yeah.
Some people have proposed that there are some fixes. We don't know how permanent those fixes are. One involves resetting your, or like unpairing and then pairing again. One is resetting the dictionary. One is like pressing caps lock and then control and then some letter and then, you know, twirling a pencil in the air counterclockwise 2.5 revolutions, followed by burying your firstborn under a full moon. But I haven't run into this, but then again, I'm either using the Revo keyboard sometimes. I have an Amazon keyboard here that I need to pair again and see if it'll do that or not.
And this is not a bug, but Buddy and I were just discussing the fact that in Safari now, when you go to the top, there is no button that says address anymore. It just tells you the name of the website. But apparently that actually is your address button.
It is. If you double tap it, it'll put you in the address field.
Yes.
Where you can interact, and then you have other buttons for like your other bookmarks or whatnot. You know, you get that toolbar by double tapping the title of the page at the top of your screen.
Well, and I've been seeing mixed reports on Twitter from low vision users. Do you guys have any consensus on if the changes actually made it better? Because I can't test it out myself.
I think that there are so many combinations of things that you can change, along with having so many different kinds of low vision, that it may be a challenge to find the right combination of things that will help you. For example, once you turn on button shapes and high contrast and all those things, you may then need to look for an appropriate wallpaper. I don't know. This is something that Has your wife mentioned anything to you now that there's 7.1? Yeah, she says, she hasn't noticed any difference. But then again, she hasn't really played a lot with trying to find the right wallpaper and all that stuff. I just turned everything on for her, you know, so.
Sure.
Anyway, so you can read about some of the changes on Apple Viz, and you can also get Anna Dresner's new book about using iOS 7 from National Braille Press. This would be her third book on using iOS. The other two have been very well received, and I have no doubt this one will as well. I'm curious not only how those are selling, but I'm curious how the book of tactile diagrams depicting iOS screens that came out a year or so ago. I'm wondering how that's gone and how useful people have found that.
I don't know. And I'm happy that this has come out because I know that the other two books that she's written have been very well received. And I think it's important for people to have options as far as what book do they want to buy. I do worry, though, that iOS 8 is right around the corner.
And, I was thinking that as you guys are
iOS 7 was released in September, and here we are in March, and why is this coming out now? I don't know. Mm-hmm. That was kind of my reaction when I saw that it was available. And that's not a dig on her.
The question that I'd have about that is, has she put herself in the developer program so that she can sort of try to get a jump on it? And if she has not, it may be something she might want to consider for next time. And if she has, you know, I understand life gets in the way of what you might want to do otherwise.
Absolutely.
Sometimes.
Yep.
But
6 months after the release is...
It's a little long. And mind you, we don't mean that to be critical. It's just something to consider.
Observation. Yeah.
Because like I say, I know her books have been very well received.
Right.
And I think it's important that people have access to those because there are significant changes between iOS 6 and iOS 7.
And it's available in Braille if you
It is available in Braille.
Which is not true for some of our other iOS 7 options. So
Or
our iOS 7 guides, rather.
You could probably get a lot out of the previous edition if you have it.
Right.
But it's nice to have the updates. I have the other one in fact, it's volume one is sitting right here because I've been reading it. Getting the Picture, Viewing the World with the iPhone Camera. There we go, by Judy Dixon.
Uh-huh.
And I got to say, even in the first chapter where it really talks about the mechanics of photography in general, I learned an awful lot.
Oh, neat.
So, yeah, I think it's a really good book. I think that if you have any use for the camera, and let's face it, all of us have some use for the camera, I think it's a well-spent $15.
I just got the Braille copy of the Mavericks Getting Started manual, the hard copy. Paid a little money for it.
But from the San Francisco Lighthouse?
Correct. If you're a fluent Braille reader, that is really nice to be able to sit there. And I mean, because you can do it on a Braille display, but you can't just skim and you can't as easily just find what you're looking
for.
And
that is why when people say our Braille display is going to replace us printing Braille.
Nay, I say.
Not yet.
No, it's not.
No, not.
Not until we get a full-page Braille display. Full page. This whole single-line thing just...
No, I think that we'd even get closer if we got even 4, 5, 6 lines.
Yeah.
I mean, that wouldn't be
absolutely
as good as a full page, but even 4, 5, 6 lines would be great because a fast Braille reader will be ending one line while starting another line.
Correct.
And you can't do that with a one-line display, obviously.
No.
Mm-hmm. No. So speaking of Braille, Mr. Scott DeVert has submitted to Apple Viz a top 4 picks for news-related applications that are really compatible with Braille displays. I want to say thank you, Scott, because I think that we often talk about voiceover accessibility, but we don't often talk about the fact that sometimes, even if it's voiceover accessible, it may not interact with your Braille display very well.
Right.
And then specifically for news apps, one of the problems that we see in a lot of these applications is refresh. So what happens is you're reading...
You think that's a problem with speech. You can just imagine what kind of problem it is with Braille, especially, with only one line of Braille at a time.
Yes, here I am reading, oh, what? That doesn't make any sense.
Anybody remember the Braille Mate?
I never saw one of those.
The Braille Mate was a trip. The Braille Mate was a little gadget. I think it was meant to compete with the Braille and Speak.
Uh-huh.
And it had speech and it had one Braille cell.
What?
It had one Braille cell and one. And what you would do is you'd set it up to scroll the Braille under your finger on the Braille cell, and that would be okay, except that it had two guide cells, one on either side of the active cell.
Uh-huh.
And so that you could tell where the Braille was in relation, you know, like, because it was an 8-dot cell.
Right.
And that would be fine, except that the guide cells were the exact same height as the active cell.
Oh, no.
And when I saw this thing, I even suggested this to Telesensor. I said, if you want to have these guide cells, they need to be lower. They need to be lower than the active cell, even by a little bit.
Yeah.
Did they take my advice? Oh, no.
Well, I really am of the opinion that as much as I like portability, I have a 30-cell Braille display, or 32, rather. And I really wish that we had gotten me the 40, because...
And this was, by the way, not completely planned to our listeners. I mean, we do have these stories, but I did plan, and we will have my review of the Braille Edge at the end of this podcast. But it's interesting that we're having this discussion, Alina, because I went from a Braille note-taking device that had 32 cells, and I did fine with that, but went to the 40 cell, and it is a huge difference. I didn't expect that.
It's a huge difference, and it's not a huge leap in size.
Right. No, it's really not.
By the way, I'm still lusting after a Braille Edge. If anybody wants to send me one, please feel free to do that.
But the thing that I'm frustrated about as a teacher is that now I've got this 32 Braille display. If I'm reading along with my students, I'm going to be off the entire time that we're reading because I don't have 40 cells. And that's going to just really be frustrating. They're going to be like, Mrs. Roberts, on the top of line, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, son of a... I got nothing, child. No. No, I mean, I'll be able to follow along with them, but I can't say, refer to this particular place if I'm actually using my Braille display. And that's because it's not a standard line of a Braille page.
Well, yeah, and it's only one line anyways.
Yeah, I know.
So how can you reference anything?
No, you can't. Yeah, that's
in context,
that's the problem.
I mean, you can count 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, crap, I lost count. I'd be losing count at 4.
Oh, me too, because 32 cells just equals I got nothing, really. There's no way for me to do that conversion. And so then I'm thinking about the 12-cell Braille display. Specifically, that's what popped into my head. I'm like, I don't even see the point. I'm just going to be honest with you guys. I don't see the point.
I looked at it's the small 14-cell display from Freedom Scientific. Is that the Focus?
No, the Focus
Mini?
Focus Blue.
There, thank you.
Yeah. Focus Blue. Yeah.
It's cool if you, like, literally, if you needed to look at a phone number or something on your iPhone. I mean, there's a function for it. I don't have the money to spend for that. To just have an extra 14-cell Braille display laying around for when I want to grab it and hit the road. But if you kind of got that money in your pocket and you don't mind spending it, it's nice. But unfortunately,
I'm just thinking about the fact that I spend, you know, when I'm reading a book, just imagining my brain saying, how many times have I hit the button in the last 5 minutes to go to the next line?
I've thought about that. How many times in the life of a Braille display does a person hit that pan next button?
Yes.
And how do they keep those things from wearing out quicker than they do? Because that's a lot. Of course, a mouse is the same way, I guess. I mean, a sighted person clicks their mouse, you know, a
so
gazillion
many
times in its life.
Yeah. So many. If they're a gamer, oh my gosh.
Have you guys ever, like, found yourself hitting the space bar on your computer really hard when you're playing a game?
Yes.
It's like you're shooting the zombies and you're like, bang, and you're thinking, okay, I probably don't need to do that.
Of course, I probably type with unnecessary force anyway, just because, you know, I learned to type on an electric. Now, I've got a friend who, of course, learned to type on a manual, and he really pounds on keyboards.
Yes.
One of the things that I have to tell my... friends and clients when they move over to the Mac is that when they're hitting the arrow keys, they really need to stop holding them down. It happens every time that they'll skip something. And I'm like, oh, that's because you held the arrow key down too long. And they're like, what?
That's interesting.
Like, I just need you to tap it. Just be polite to the little key.
Be polite to your arrow keys.
Well, you can slow down that key repeat rate.
Right. That's true.
But it's better to not hold it down.
Right.
Yes. But we can continue with our Braille discussion because the next story, buddy, they use Braille note takers for some of their products, right?
Yes, yes. Sendero has, in fact, released the updates to the Sendero GPS apps for the Braille Sense and the Braille Note. I don't remember. Did they also release updates for the standalone Maps app?
Yes, for the PC.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And actually, if you upgrade to 2014 and you don't have the Maps application, it's part of your package now.
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. And they cut the price in half.
Did they?
So they did. The upgrade is $599, I believe.
For the low, low price of
$600.
Still pretty expensive.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I've got to experience the full GPS application that they have for those note takers and take your app on your iPhone and just make it that much cooler because you get a lot more information.
I got to tell you, I mean, even though those apps are really quite expensive.
Yeah.
They really cater to what we need out of a GPS app.
Yep.
They really do. And I think that that's worth something.
Yes. Yeah. And if you are fortunate to own a Braille note taker, because of course you also have to have the device first.
Right.
Yes. It's definitely a product that is worth the money. And I think for people who travel frequently, people who are in unfamiliar areas on a regular basis.
If I was
a professional doing a lot of travel, I would spend the money. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. But just remember that technology is wonderful in its proper context. And
yes, you still need to use your brain.
It's not a magic bullet. You still need to use your brain. You still need to use your cane or your guide dog.
Yes.
And you still need to understand that it might tell you to go straight for 3 blocks, but there might be construction or there might be a missing piece of sidewalk or there might be an open manhole. And but the computer said, the computer was wrong. And you need to figure that out.
Yes, you need to use both the technology and your orientation and mobility skills to actually get yourself from point A to point B.
That's right. It's an aid. It is not a magic bullet.
Well, speaking of magic bullets... Our next story is kind of fascinating to me.
It really is.
Yes. Samsung has just announced that it's come out with 3 new accessories. Now, as of Friday, I'm going to tell you that I looked and looked and looked and tried to find out how you buy these. I've got nothing. So
I got nothing. And apparently they're only available for the one. Apparently they're only available for the Galaxy
Core Advanced. Correct.
Which is the sort of lower end Galaxy phone.
It is a lower end Galaxy. Yes, it's only running 4.2 Jelly Bean. It's got a 4.7 inch display, so it's definitely targeted towards low vision users. But they've just come out with 3 new accessories for this Core Advanced device. And those include a case for your phone that actually...
It turns your phone into the MOAT sensor.
Yes. So if you've ever had the opportunity...
Anyone remember the MOAT sensor?
Yeah.
So imagine carrying around a device that every time you're within 2 meters of an object, it buzzes at you.
It's about 6 feet.
Yeah, 6 feet. So every time you're close to the wall, it's going to buzz at you. Every time you're close to a person. Like, the way they touted this was hilarious to me that, this is how people are going to find out if they're near the people. And I'm like, it's not going to distinguish that it's a person. It's just going to tell you that you're close to an object. Right. Hey, doofus, don't run into that.
Unless it does more than just vibrate.
It doesn't.
Oh, okay.
It does not do more than just vibrate, sir.
Ah, okay. So it really is kind of like the MOAT sensor then.
Right.
Or they've got a couple other things. One's called the mini guide, and it does something similar.
Yes. I've played with the mini guide, and I loved the stories from the mainstream tech blogs where it was like, this will mean that blind people don't have to use a cane anymore. And I'm like,
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't, because I just can imagine
the person. Doesn't tell you that there's an open manhole in front of you.
Yeah. I just imagine the blind person waving around this device, hoping the sensors can pick up enough for them to actually not fall on their face. I'm thinking, sure. All this thing does is vibrate at you or play a little tone to tell you that you're within 6 feet of an object. And when I played with the mini guide, It just buzzed like constantly.
I'm really intrigued by the voice, which is made by a fellow. It's Seeing with Sound.
Yes.
His name is Peter Meyer.
Right. Yeah. Part of me wants to get an Android just so I can play with that.
Yeah. I'm really intrigued with that because it sounds like it may give you information similarly to, do you remember the Sonic Guide?
No, I never got to play with one of those.
The Sonic Guide was cool. I got to play with it once. Of course, it was also expensive and probably easy to break and whatever. But it was like, you know, you put this pair of glasses on and it played these spacey sounds and you could sort of tell by the sound like what kind of thing something was.
Yes.
Like a tree sounded one way and a shrub sounded and like smushy.
Way.
And yeah, it was really kind of cool.
And that's, I think,
I gather
the idea
that
behind the voice
does something like that. I'd really like to play with it. Now, here's what we do. We get the Moto G because the Moto G is cheap.
There you
it's
go.
Like the 16 gig one is $200.
Right.
Put the voice on it and just use it for that.
There you go. So beyond our little bat sensor, as again, a lot of the mainstream tech blogs like to call this.
It turns you into a bat.
It turns you into a bat. No, it really doesn't.
Which is what I've always wanted to be.
Yeah. The other two accessories are that there is an optical sand scan, as they're calling it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which are the sand scan people going to...
I don't know. I would think that they should go after Samsung for this one.
I think they should. I think they took...
Yeah.
By the way, don't you have a sand scan?
I do. I love it. It's fantastic.
I totally need to get one. I haven't gotten one yet, and I
kinda
need to.
I was thinking the same thing.
Well,
I finally got Prismo the other day.
Yeah, it's so portable that you can take it anywhere. So, you know, like for me, I just carry it in my backpack. And then if I'm out somewhere where I really need to use it, I can just set it up right there.
Okay, so is this thing really cardboard?
It really is cardboard with magnets.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I hope it's sturdier than it sounds.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they could have used a different set of materials, but it's also weighs almost nothing. So that's the other reality is that when you convert to heavier materials that might be sturdier, you're adding weight. So I think that they were going for both portability and light.
Did you get the battery pack for it?
I did.
Or the adapter or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Because I always tell people, don't buy the one that doesn't come with the light because that would just
be
silly.
Definitely get the one with the light.
Yeah.
And I should just go and order one.
So this optical stand scan, which is really hard to say, apparently will detect when you use the device, because again, it's a little accessory that you add to the phone, and then it will detect the text and take the picture for you. So apparently it's supposed to take a little bit of the pushing buttons out of the operation, I suppose.
Yeah, a little of the guesswork, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. And then the last thing is the voice labeler, and I akin this to a pen friend, so you're going around labeling
objects.
Yeah, it
uses your NFC and RFID tags, like the pen friend or something similar.
So, again, we have no information for you guys about how much this costs, because I couldn't
I don't even know
it.
Where you buy the Galaxy Core Advanced.
Yeah, so part of me is wondering, like, is the Galaxy Core Advanced even available in the United States? I don't know. But it must be, because why would have all the tech blogs, I swear, ran this story on Friday when it was released?
Because Samsung paid them.
Yeah, right?
There was an article about that. Didn't you see that article a couple of weeks ago about, like, why Apple gets such crappy press and Samsung gets better press and, like... You know, Samsung can do the same thing as Apple, but Apple will get beat up for it and Samsung will get praised for it.
A little money.
That's fascinating.
A little bit of money changing hands, maybe. Yeah. I'll have to find the article because I saw it on Twitter.
Okay.
Well, while you're using your fancy new Galaxy phone, maybe you could use some fancy new haptic shoes.
Yes.
Made in India.
Or insoles. You can get them as
right,
an insole.
Right, or the insoles, yeah.
And actually, the insoles, if you're blind, you can get them for $50 a pair.
Correct.
Pre-order. I have kind of mixed feelings about this. I'd like to try it just because it sounds like it might be kind of interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so tempted to pre-order the insoles. I'll tell you what.
I'm tempted to pre-order the insoles to try them, but on the other hand, it just feels like a solution looking for a problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it doesn't tell you things like, I mean, like, if they were insoles that had a sensor in the toe, there was like a like a sonar thing or some kind of sensor in the toe that would tell you of drop-offs and warn you of something like that.
Right.
That would be useful.
Right.
That would be super useful, and that would actually go some way towards eliminating the need for a cane. I wouldn't say that I would trust it completely and eliminate my cane, but it would certainly be something. And it's the one shortcoming that I've found with a lot of these electronic mobility aids that people are coming out with to be helpful. Like, you know, this mobility aid will tell you about your environment. It takes pictures and it'll tell you if there are people, or it'll vibrate and tell you how far away from an object you are. But none of them tell you about drop-offs.
Yeah, what is that all about?
I don't know if that problem is just too hard or if it's just something that people don't think about. I'm not sure.
It could be, but I'll tell you what, it needs to be something they think about, because that's the thing we all think about when we're walking.
Right.
Absolutely.
Drop-offs are the thing that scares us.
Steps up isn't as huge a problem as steps down, but it's still, I mean, either way.
Yeah.
Like I say, I don't know if it's just that these developers who are mostly sighted and want to be helpful just don't think about that problem, or if it really is too hard.
You know, I don't think it should be that hard, honestly, but maybe I'm wrong. Jamie, why don't you tell us what these shoes actually do?
Maybe you just need more sensors, like you need a shoe sensor, and then something else higher up to detect overheads. I mean, like you can't, maybe you just can't do it with one sensor.
Well, yeah, I don't think you can. Because overheads, of course, are the thing that the cane and sometimes the guide dog.
Right.
I don't know about you, buddy, but my guide dogs have all been notorious for not being good about overheads.
Oh, yeah. That's a hard concept for a dog.
It is a hard concept. And they're like, why am I looking up? You're way up there. I don't really care.
Well, yeah. And oftentimes, you know, you'll show them an overhead and they'll just say, oh, I got to walk around this thing at this spot. And then when the overhead's gone, they still walk around it.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's my favorite thing. So, Jamie, how do these shoes actually work?
You know what? I read this story and I just thought, oh, wow, this seems like another haptic shoe thingy. And I honestly don't remember a lot.
I think it's the haptic shoe thingy that we covered a few months ago.
It is the haptic shoe thingy. It's actually not a different haptic shoe thingy.
Okay, so I mean,
it's the same haptic shoe thingy.
So it's going to vibrate, but does it transmit information to a smartphone or something? Because I remember it said something about take you home.
Yeah, there's an app, and it'll, instead of telling you turn left, turn right, it'll like vibrate your shoe.
Correct. Okay. So the app is going to be available on Android, iOS, and Windows, because one of the things that people really need to know is this was developed specifically for people in the developing world. If people in the developed world decide to buy it, that's great, but he didn't develop it for us.
It's an excellent point.
Yeah.
I think it might be my duty as a tech enthusiast. You know, I'm not a tech journalist exactly, but I'm like a member of the tech press. There we go. As a member of the tech press, I believe it is my duty to acquire a pair of these haptic insoles and review them. And
yeah, and unfortunately, the pre-order information doesn't actually tell you when you're going to get them. So that's kind of unfortunate. But I agree with you. I think I might be compelled to actually buy the insoles just so that I can test them out and tell people what my experience was like.
Yeah. So on Serotalk Podcast 350, Buddy will have those.
Exactly.
And they'll be able to.
And the other thing that I believe this inventor is banking on is that the sighted world will actually purchase them, because they're not only an aid to the blind as far as navigation, they also will count calories burned and work as a pedometer. So...
oh, that would be handy, and it might help direct sighted people that have their mind and their eyes on other things.
Right. So it's an interesting concept, and it'll be interesting to see where it goes. Having the whole price difference between the sighted and the blind community is kind of interesting, because some people might feel really resentful. But again, he really wants this to be something that people can purchase.
He really wants this to be useful. And the reality is that a lot of blind people really don't have a lot of money.
Correct.
Right.
Yep.
Especially in the developing world.
You think we're poor here? Are you kidding me? Yeah. Right. You know, we complain about our 70% unemployment rate. Try closer to 100 in some of these nations.
But speaking of poor people, though, the Senate may be trying to do something to alleviate some of that.
Oh my God, I hope this gets passed. I cannot even tell
you. I hope this gets passed too. Really, SSI really needs an overhaul very badly. $85 in earned income before they start cutting your SSI. I mean, like, that's nothing.
No. Mm-hmm. No.
And the asset maximum.
What is it, $2,500 worth of assets?
And no, it's $2,000.
It's $2,000.
It's $2,000.
That's still nothing.
That was set in 1989, and it hasn't been changed since then.
Wow.
25 years. Yeah, that needs to change somewhat.
25 years. What it really means is that people on SSI are terrified of people giving them money. Period. Like, right. No,
well,
don't
terrified,
give me money.
Well, they're terrified to
go get employment.
In any way better themselves because if they do anything, then they, number one, they lose it. And number two, getting back on is just so difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the same with disability, with SSDI.
Yep.
Correct.
You know, once you hit that magic $1,801, if you're blind,
right,
you're screwed. So you better start looking for those deductions, baby.
Yep.
There's so many things about the way that we treat our disabled community that is just tragic. Because on the one hand, I'm really grateful that I had SSI available to me. I lived in utter poverty. Don't get me wrong. But I had a roof over my head, and I was able to have food on my table, and that was pretty amazing. I did not have luxuries, but I had a roof over my head, and I was utterly grateful to have SSI. However, I played that I can't have a job, or if I get a job, it better last for at least a year so that I feel confident in letting go of my SSI.
Right.
Oh, and don't get married either.
Oh, yeah, don't do that, because you'll lose out on that, too.
Because you'll lose it, right? And that's what happened to me when I got married, was that it went bye-bye, bye-bye.
Yeah, seriously, okay. I mean, there's so many disincentives for disabled people.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's a problem. It's a real problem.
So please contact your senators. This bill was introduced by Elizabeth Warren and Sharon Brown, and if this is something that you're passionate about as somebody who's either been on SSI or who's on SSI currently, you need to let your senators know that this is something that's really important to you. And a similar bill was introduced in the House last year, and it went nowhere. So I don't know that I have confidence that it's going to get passed. I mean, if it passes in the Senate, it might sit in the House and do nothing.
But you
still have an obligation to go to your legislative body and say, this is something that really would make my life a lot better. If I could not have to worry about, you know, an inheritance for some people is all that it would take.
Yep.
And it might be a really little tiny inheritance. Oh, but it's an inheritance. So
the part that freaked me out was that it even said, well, you know, like if you can't get housing assistance from your relations.
Correct.
Really?
Yep.
So basically, you're on your own, buddy boy, and you're going to live in poverty, and that's just it.
Yep. And also, for all of those people who are capable of getting yourself employment, please try as hard as you can. If you lose your SSI because you got a job, that's a good thing, in a way.
Sure.
The other thing is that if you can get employment for long enough, you can qualify for SSDI, which actually has a lot better.
It's better. Yeah.
Set of rules.
Yeah.
Yep.
But 8 million people in this country live on SSI.
Truly, there are a lot of things that they'll count as exemptions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lunch, even transportation, any adaptive equipment that you have to buy out of your own pocket.
Right.
Anything like that counts as an exemption.
Mm-hmm.
So please actually contact your representative, because if they don't hear from you, then they don't care.
Disclaimer, I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah.
No, right. No.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we're talking about doing things to better ourselves and kind of just basically make our lives better. It's really not a stretch at all to say that being able to learn a musical instrument, if you have that interest at all, is a great thing. It's a great pastime. It can actually make you a little money if you get good enough at it.
Yeah, it makes Jamie a little money.
This is true. It does. Yes, it does. We have a gentleman here. Actually, the tech doctor did a podcast and interviewed Bill Brown, who's been around a while.
Bill Brown has been around forever.
Yeah. and offers a lot of courses on learning to play by ear, whether it's like 13 different instruments. I didn't realize there was that much.
A lot of them are on Bard.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
But if you want high quality ones on CD or download or whatever that don't have a lot of the tape hiss and whatnot, you can buy them.
Yeah, go ahead and get
them. And you should. They're not that expensive. I bought ages ago, I bought the guitar one and haven't had a chance to sit down and learn it, but I have it. And they are really well done and he's good. But yeah, you got the piano and the guitar, as you expect, lots of that. And then you've got I think you've got the penny whistle and you've got the harmonica and you've got the bass and all kinds of crazy. Yeah. I think there's even a sax or something in there, isn't there?
Nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, violin is one of the newer ones, I think, that he's just added.
Oh, cool.
So. Yeah, yeah.
I've always wanted to learn a string instrument, but I'm terrified that my ears won't be able to handle the learning curve.
You might be surprised. You might just have to give it a try.
Yeah, Bill Brown does a good job. He breaks things down to just notes. I mean, he breaks down the theory and doesn't go into a lot of that dry. He gives you enough that you understand it, but he doesn't overwhelm you with it.
Sure.
And when you have enough, as you go through, he'll go through, a song and he'll break it down a couple measures at a time.
Okay.
And give you finger placement and all this sort of thing for each thing. And he goes through very methodically. Yeah. So yeah, good stuff.
Well, we'll stay on the idea of learning new things because this last story is kind of about a new way to look at how you learn Braille and how the people who work with our blind students or our blind adults when they're learning Braille can interact with them. So the Perkins Smart Brailler came out a couple years ago now. And the unfortunate reality is that it's $2,000. And for a lot of families, that's just out of range. And because there isn't necessarily a need for some school district to purchase this Smart Brailler as opposed to a regular Perkins, then it often doesn't get done. And so this father ended up being able to use a program that helps families purchase assistive technology, and they got a grant and were able to get the Perkins Smart Brailler. And according
about
to
half
dad,
of the article really is about that process of going through and looking for that grant. And there are various grant programs, and there are also, I think most states also have low interest technology and disability sort of improvement loans. And so those are definitely things that are worth checking out.
And what he has found in this first couple days or weeks of his son having this Perkins Smart Brailler is that his son is more confident while he's brailing. And he's getting faster on his own without the assistance of his dad. And I thought that was just really fantastic. So for those who don't know, the Perkins Smart Brailler has both an LCD screen for a sighted person to actually be reading what the person has brailled. It also has an audio output so that when the child actually hits the keys, he gets an audio feedback of this is actually what you typed. And I think that that's just fantastic. You know, one of the things that kids really struggle with when they're young is the dexterity of their hands and the power, because Perkins Braillers require your hands to be strong. And I can just see that the Smart Brailler would be really neat, because if the kid thinks that he's hit dot one and four, but dot one is the only one that actually got registered, then he or she's not having to go up to the top to look to see if they got their letter, which they should do in addition, of course, to hearing. Right. But it's a really great way of getting that immediate feedback. Oh, you tried to hit dot one and four, but really that four didn't go down far enough for it to register. So I think it's really cool. I wish it wasn't $2,000.
It also takes into account different learning styles because everyone learns differently. So I think that's important too.
Yep. If you are a parent of a child who's learning Braille or you're a teacher, please look into these other options, because quota funds are never going to pay for the Smart Brailler. That's just a reality. But it might be a really good option for a particular student or a particular kid. And I'm just glad that it exists. Again, wish that it didn't cost as much as it does, but I can't fix that problem.
Coming up after the break, Google, more education, fast food. You really want that? Jamie tries some chicken. And your comments, all coming up on Serotalk Podcast 192.168.1.1.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Serotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Meet Ebot, the revolutionary new video magnifier from Hims. The Ebot connects to your iPad or Android device through a self-contained, dedicated Wi-Fi connection. It can also connect to your PC, Mac, or a monitor of any size. The Ebot weighs just 4 pounds and its battery lasts throughout the day. To learn more information, visit us on the web at www.hims-inc.com. Or if you're at CSUN, meet the Ebot in person in booths 705 and 805. Ebot, the new standard in video magnifiers.
Welcome back to Serotalk 192, and our next article here is about Chromebooks in education.
Hey, buddy, you've actually got to try the Chromebook, correct?
I did. I still have it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this article was interesting. It talks about why Chromebook is a great fit for education, and gosh.
Yeah, but tell us about Chromebox, because that's really, for our low-vision users, it's not, honestly, for our low-vision users, I'm not sure an 11-inch or whatever the size screen it is would be useful.
And I don't think that, accessibility, one of the complaints that at least happened early on when the beta started was there's not really a lot in the way of accessibility for other disabilities other than blindness
other
and
than
maybe
total
low vision.
Blindness. Yeah.
Yeah. Low vision stuff wasn't great. And, you know, if you had cognitive things or you needed dictation or you needed alternate input devices or anything like that, the support just wasn't there. I don't know that that's really improved any, but as far as Chromevox, yeah, you can use it. I haven't really tried Google Docs or any of those things to see how well they work, but I don't think I'd want to be stuck to a Chromebook all day at school. I don't think that I'd be very productive with it.
Well, I was just thinking, like, from the perspective of cost, you could get a child a netbook for about the same price and put on NVDA No, you don't like that idea either. Okay.
No, well, for one thing, good luck finding a netbook, but...
Sure. Okay, then a low-cost laptop.
You could get a lower-cost laptop and put NVDA on it.
Yeah.
I think you'd certainly have more options than what you'd have with Chromebook. But the other thing about the Chromebook, it's a lot cheaper. I mean, you can get a Chromebook for between $200 and $400.
Right.
So yeah, they're cheap.
But if the accessibility is not there, it doesn't matter.
And I think the accessibility is definitely a work in progress. But I don't think that it's enough to be terribly productive, especially if you're talking about all day, especially for people that are not blind. And even if they are blind, some of the interface is just clunky.
Okay.
It's just clunky. For example, if you want to review something, you have to change the level of granularity that the arrow keys work at. You can't on the fly say, I want to spell this letter by letter. You have to go and change the granularity of what's being read down to words, and then there's a command to go letter by letter. And it's not really linear. For example, where you can kind of go left and right to move left and right, or up and down to move up and down on Windows, or even on the Mac, with Chromebook, it's just sort of previous and next.
Okay.
And it seems like it's a lot more linear and not very spatial.
Okay.
The other thing that didn't really sit right with me is, well, Kevin Mitnick says that Chromebook is the most secure operating system out. Well, okay, I have a lot of respect for Kevin Mitnick, and he's a sharp guy.
Yeah.
But the biggest problem that I have with that is, it's secure because there's not much there. It's a browser, and like it connects, and everything's run somewhere else. So you're actually not relying on the security of the notebook itself. You're relying on the security of the infrastructure.
Of Google.
Yeah, I was getting to that. But yes. You're relying on the security of the infrastructure, on the security of the apps, on the security of the platforms that the remote apps are installed on. And you're also relying on the fact that Google isn't going to do something really, really nasty someday.
Right.
And I can already hear people saying that it's the same thing with Apple, that, you know, if you're in the Apple ecosystem, you're relying on the same, you know, that Apple's not going to do something horrible. And to an extent, that's true.
Uh-huh.
I think, though, with the Chromebook, it's more true.
The danger I see is, okay, let's get the education excited about the Chromebook, and then our kids get left behind again for, you know, the same reason that we have for everything else, which is that, oh, then maybe a teacher decides that Google Drive and Google Docs is the only way that they're going to communicate with their students. And then what do we do? Because even if Chromevox works with Google Docs better than every other screen reader available currently, I don't know if it's good enough of an experience that we can justify having a student be stuck with Google Docs. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a problem too, but I don't know. I think that the whole security argument, there was something that didn't quite sit right with me about it. So all of that, I think for our disabled kids, it's just not, I don't think it's a great solution.
Yeah, I don't either.
No, I mean, I've not played with a Chromebook, but I think we've got some really good solutions, you know, from the standpoint of a blind child that I would hate to see us move away from at this point, honestly. I think we need to really continue to work with what we've got here.
And that's not to say that we don't think that the Chromebook should improve, because it should.
Right.
Oh, absolutely. And I hope that Chromebox continues to get better.
Right. I'd love to see it as a choice, but the reality is, even if all of those things in the article are completely accurate, the fact that Chromebooks are still like less than 1% of the market, isn't that? That's
going to
work
so.
Against us.
So, Jamie, speaking of Google, something about prices. And Google Drive.
Yeah, it looks like they're going to drop their drive storage pricing significantly, kind of trying to encourage, or I mean, the hope is that maybe Apple will follow suit, and maybe...
Maybe Apple will follow suit.
Yeah.
Maybe Dropbox will follow suit.
Maybe.
Okay, there are going to be two camps of people here, I think. Okay, you're going to have one camp of people say, oh, Google Drive has just lowered their prices. I'm going to move over to that. Because they lowered prices so we can get more. The other camp are going to be, oh, Google's lowered prices again. I don't know. Google says basically they can do anything with anything that I've got if I use Google services. So do I want to trust my data to that? No, I don't think so.
Right.
Well, I'm still sitting in here as the Dropbox user who says, I don't really care. I don't use iCloud and I don't use Google Drive and I don't spend any money. So...
Right.
Yeah,
I use the 3-5 gigs of iCloud. I've got like 15 gig free on Dropbox.
On Dropbox. Mm-hmm. Yep.
But no, I lie, because I actually spent the $99 for unlimited storage per year for BitCasa.
Oh, wow. See?
Okay, but here's what's cool about BitCasa.
Uh-huh.
For my $99 a year, unlike other services that do backup, you know, do your system backup, some, you know, your data backup, for, you know, about $60 a year, like Carbonite and that other one, Backblaze.
Right.
My $99 on BitCasa, I can connect all of my computers to BitCasa.
Ooh, nice.
And I have
not just one device.
I have four computers I could potentially connect up to it.
The team here at on the Serotech podcast, we say, Google, thank you, we don't care.
Pretty much.
I honestly don't foresee this changing Apple's pricing at all.
No, I don't either.
Apple doesn't play that way.
That's right. You got the triple click home people on this podcast.
That's true. You do have.
Apple sort of leads with a proposal. They usually don't play me too.
Right.
I also don't know anybody who uses iCloud as their primary backup solution. I just don't.
Right. No.
Mm-mm.
Right.
iCloud is used sort of as a convenience to, like, if you know you're going to access something from more than one device, they'll use it.
Sure.
But for backup now, But Apple's never been one to say, oh, so-and-so is doing something. We've got to do that too right now. They just don't. I mean, like, sometimes they may lower a cost in response, but it's going to be a while. It's going to be after they do a lot of studying on it. They never do anything like that reactionary.
No. Mm. No. So I found this article to be like, really? Okay, sure. Let's play the prognosticate game again, which Buddy and I complained about on our last recording of a podcast, and probably all of them at this point. So Google's dropping prices and Amazon is raising them.
For the first time in 9 years.
For the first time in 9 years.
Right.
They're raising your Amazon Prime from $79 to $99. If you are a student, it's going from $39 to $49 for your yearly cost. And the reaction that I've seen from people on Twitter and this article is that nobody's going to care. Like, Amazon is not going to lose Prime members.
No, it's like there's some people that got really angry about it.
Yeah. Really?
There were some people that got really angry about it. You know, you
but
lost a customer or whatever.
But you're not going to get charged that $99 until your renewal comes around.
Right. Well, okay, so here's the deal. Okay, so they raised the price by $20, which they haven't done in 9 years.
Right.
The price of everything has gone up.
Mm-hmm. And shipping, especially.
Have you shipped anything from with using UPS recently? I have, and it's not cheap.
No, right. It's really. Every time I ship a box, my brain does the, oh God, how much? Really? Okay.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And the insurance will kill you. But
oh, forget it. I try and avoid shipping things that need insurance.
$20 a year means like two really cheap pizzas a year less, or like I said to somebody on Twitter, eight mochi frappy froofy drinks a year less.
Jamie, do you use Prime?
I do, and
yeah,
I love it.
I do too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't care about the free Amazon video. Okay, that's okay.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or the borrowing books if you have a hardware Kindle device.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Don't care. I'm all about the shipping.
It's all about
that
the shipping.
That has saved, I'll tell you what. Yes, if you order $35 worth of stuff, you can usually get free Super Saver shipping.
You get free shipping. It's not 2 days.
No, it's like free. We'll put you at the bottom of the queue and you'll get your stuff in a week shipping.
Yeah. I've done the free shipping, and then 8 to 10 days later, my item shows up and I'm like,
But if you want to order something for $5 and you want it shipped and you want to get it in 2 days, you'll get it in 2 days. I'll tell you what, I have saved more money than the $79 I spend on shipping with Amazon.
Well, and I'm just remembering prior to getting Prime, how many times we would do the, oh God, we're sitting at $23. Do you have anything on Amazon that you want that's like $5? And we would say no.
No.
But we'd have to find something to get our free shipping. And now it's $35. So I'm like, well, that's even worse.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I know I'm being petty by saying that, but I'm going to pay the extra money if it means I still get to keep my 2-day free shipping.
Now, had they raised it by $40 the way that some people were saying they were considering doing, that would give me pause.
That would have been, yeah.
But $20, especially in having not done anything like that in 9 years, I'm fine with that. You know, Amazon is a for-profit business and they deserve to make something. Certainly, I'm not going to say, oh, yes, please, I'll happily pay more. No, but on the other hand, you know, fair is fair.
Right.
And Amazon has, you know, with the exception of dragging their feet on Kindle accessibility, Amazon's done me right for a long time. And no, I don't have any problem with that.
So would you have a problem with ordering a Starbucks ahead of time?
I probably would because I don't like coffee.
Oh, well, that
wouldn't
work.
I probably would because I don't like Starbucks.
So I'm the only person who drinks Starbucks occasionally.
Do you drink those mochi frappy froofy drinks?
Actually, I drink usually just a latte, just a plain latte, nothing really in it.
The whole mochi frappy froofy.
I mean, no, I probably wouldn't order ahead of time because
cream and
I kind of want it hot when I get there.
I do think this is pretty cool, though.
Yeah, it is.
As a techie, that I could go onto my smartphone, type in my order, show up to Starbucks 5 minutes later, and it's already in the queue. I pay my money, and I get my drink, and I leave.
And a good Starbucks is a busy one.
Well, aren't they using Square or something where it sees your phone and like you don't even have, so you just pick it up and go, man, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
You're already paid, so it's even easier.
Right. It's really great that they're continuing to be innovative, as it were, with their customers. Mm-hmm. And Jamie's not wrong. There are times that I've been in a Starbucks and I'm like, there is not enough coffee. Like, there isn't enough of a good coffee to convince me to stand in this line.
Right.
Now, on the other hand, of course, all of this convenience and paying and stuff makes paying hurt less because you don't ever see it. And so that means you have to be more mindful that you're paying for things. But
I think it's really dangerous. I am definitely of the opinion that I am not nearly as in touch with my financial work, what I spend my money on, as much as I should be. And
I think that's a pretty common thing.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I mean, we use Mint, and if I go and I check Mint, I can go and look at how we're doing and see our budget and how are we doing on our budget. But do I think about
what is Mint? I'm not familiar with that.
Oh, Mint.com is my favorite thing when it comes to budgeting. It is a website that allows you to get access to all your financial information, from credit cards to loans to your bank.
Really?
And it all aggregates it for you. So you can create a budget and set up rules on, this is how much I want to spend on groceries for the month, this is how much I want to spend on gasoline. And every time you spend more than that, it'll actually send you a little alert. Like, just letting you know, you actually spent more than you had anticipated spending. And so, like, it'll give you, based on your loans and other banking information that you've given to it, it'll tell you how much money you're actually worth, which most of us is negative.
Right.
Yes.
We owe more than we are worth. But it's really great. So you're not giving them your actual banking numbers. It basically pulls from your logins to your other websites. And then it uses that information once to get the information to aggregate, and then it basically puts it in a place where nobody can access it. That's my understanding of how they do their security. We've never had a problem. And if you are looking for a budgeting solution, Mint is really great. Their app is not very voiceover friendly, but their website is. And it's free to use. And it's really great because there are times when, you know, my husband will be looking through our Mint information and he'll say, did you spend ... on this? And I go, oh, yes.
Yeah.
So you don't manually enter that information. Like if you put something on your credit card, it knows
that.
Correct. Awesome. Yep. Okay.
Yep. Every time you, if you tell it that you have a credit card with Chase or Bank of America, then it, every time you spend money on that credit card, it gets put into Mint and then you can see it.
Very good.
Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah. Yeah, you should. So, Jamie, you might be in the market for a new car, I understand. Maybe you could get Apple Play.
Yeah, my wife and I hit a deer over the weekend. It appears, as I record this podcast, I'm doing a little bit of multitasking here, I will confess, and it appears that we have totaled our vehicle. So, she and I get to go car shopping. We're so close to having this crazy thing paid off. And you know how good that feels if you've ever owned a
car
vehicle with a spouse.
Car shopping is the worst. It is the worst.
Yes, yes. But life is such as it is. And
we can
you know,
make
who
you
knows,
a deal.
Maybe.
Boy, if we got a deal for you.
We can get CarPlay in your next vehicle if you are willing to spend the money for, except maybe not a Toyota. They thought maybe it would, and then they said, well, yeah.
Yeah, we're probably going to get it, but we don't know when. We're not telling you when. We don't have any comment on when.
No.
CarPlay, of course, is this thing where it's going to interact with your iOS device, and then you can control all kinds of things using
from your car.
I mean, that stuff's coming. There's just no question about it. So,
yep,
as with everything in Apple's ecosystem, yes, it's coming. Oh, you want to know when?
Forget that. Yeah.
Sorry, we can't give you that information. That's classified.
Yeah.
The thing about the whole story with CarPlay is kind of like a really cementing what we've been saying about Apple even more, in that Apple's a high-end luxury brand. What cars are coming with AirPlay out the gate? Mercedes. It's one of the when somebody says luxury car, what's the first kind of car that you think of? It's going to usually be Mercedes, right?
Yep,
right.
Mercedes, Lexus, and I definitely foresee the Lexus getting this before the Toyota.
Oh, it's going to get but like right now, it's Mercedes and Ferrari and like something else.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, again, Apple luxury brand pairing with luxury brand cars.
That's right.
Makes sense. And then you're talking about early adopters. Early adopters are enthusiasts, usually with the money to spend on being early adopters. And so there you go.
Correct.
We can expect this to trickle down to the rest of us in due course, but not today. and probably not next year. As this article rightly points out, it took a very long time for Bluetooth to become very commonplace in new cars.
And in a lot of cases, it's still not. I mean, there are definitely a lot of models out on the lots today that are brand new that don't have Bluetooth connectivity. So,
or do they have dot connectors?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I hate that. We totally paid the $30 for the car charger because that was something that was worth our money because we couldn't charge our phones any other way. But speaking of Apple and prognosticating, because that's what we do, iOS 7 was released in September. We can foresee that iOS 8 is going to be coming out this year. The question is, what's going to be coming with iOS 8? Assuming they call it that.
And the rumor mill is working in full force now, I'll tell you what.
Yeah. Rumor mill. So one of the things that this article points to is actually something I hope happens. And actually, I would love for it to have happened yesterday or last week or 6 months ago, which is having transit access on my Maps app.
Yeah, it makes sense for it's. This makes sense, though, considering Apple's all of Apple's mapping acquisitions.
Yes.
And then
all
they got
of their mapping
acquisitions last year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're going to be building transit into the Maps app. And it's really frustrating. You can actually go to the Maps app now and ask for transit directions, and then it pulls up all the apps that can actually give you transit directions.
Wow. Thank you, Apple.
Thank you. That's not what I wanted. And since I'm here with you two, and you guys can answer my questions sometimes, is there a way in Google Maps to actually look at the directions prior to me going out my door? Because I could not figure it out. I tried to set up a bus route.
I don't know. And I haven't used Google Maps in a long, long time.
Okay.
And I've just barely started playing with it, so I'm not sure.
Okay. But yes, all us public transit reliant people would really, really love to be able to have access to transit information. Mm-hmm.
Would you like to get rid of Game Center?
Actually, getting iOS rid of 8? Game Center probably wouldn't hurt my feelings.
Right.
Can we do that? That would be great. Actually, what I really want is to get rid of the news. What's it called?
The stock information or?
No. The newspaper thing.
Newsstand. Newsstand.
Well, there are a couple of accessible things in Newsstand, like the magazine.
Oh, finally. Okay.
The magazine there may be one or two others, but unfortunately there's no standard, so you can't just buy something and hope it's accessible.
And hope. Yeah, right. Exactly.
I would definitely like to get rid of the stocks app, though.
Yeah. Me too.
I also like that they're planning to change the notification center so that it shows you everything instead of playing this, I want to see what I missed, or I want to see all of it, or I want to see today.
Right. Yeah, they may have outsmarted themselves a little bit with the notification center.
Yeah,
because I just changed mine to all anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
So it looks like the previous one, more or less. Although, you know what? I wish they didn't do. I wish that they had kept the headings so that each app was under its own heading.
Yes.
Yeah.
That would have made it a whole bunch easier to navigate if they had kept that.
Do you guys also have a problem where you're navigating the notification center and then suddenly it pops you back up to the very top?
Yes.
One of the things I have to do sometimes is just hit the missed button because I can't get to the app that I actually wanted to see what the notification was about because it won't let me.
Wow. Yeah.
I think what I need to do is just go in and rearrange them because that's really my part of my problem.
Or I'll go through and I'll just hit clear this section, confirm clear this section, clear this section, confirm clear this section.
Yeah. So, buddy, now that Pages is more accessible, are you as interested in the possibility of an update for Microsoft Office for Mac?
No.
I'm not either, frankly.
You mean the completely inaccessible Office for Mac?
That one.
Yeah.
I think that it will probably continue to stay completely inaccessible.
I do, too.
I
have no reason to believe that Microsoft... And I actually found this headline really hilarious because they actually announced, what was it, a couple months ago, that they were just going to stop supporting it altogether. We lied. We're really going to come out with a new version.
We're not really going to do that. Yeah.
And seriously, Mac users, why are you buying Office? You have iWork, you have OpenOffice, is LibreOffice
also on the Mac? Apparently
there
are some font compatibility issues or something.
They'll all open doc, but that doesn't necessarily mean that when you open a Word file that it's going to always render it the same way.
No, actually, every single time I open a DOCX file, I get the message that says some of this wasn't supported.
Some of these features may be incompatible.
Yes. Yes. I'm like, I don't whatever. Even know what that means, but thank you. All right.
Thank you. Go ahead and open it anyway. We'll deal.
I'm just waiting for the iPhone Air, Alina.
Oh, that... God.
I think this is a funny story because this isn't an analyst saying this is what's going to happen. It's an artist who just drew a concept in his mind of what they might do. And I think it's hilarious if some guy at Apple is looking at this and saying, oh, no, how did he do that? Because that's almost exactly what we have on the drawing board.
That would be funny.
So, I will say at least it's a 4.7-inch Air iPhone rather than the 6-inch iPhone, which we discussed on the last
Triple Click
Home. Yeah, I think the 6-inch
iPhone is just way the heck over the top.
I don't even want a 5-inch iPhone. I really don't. I have the iPad mini, and I don't need...
I personally think that the iPhone is just the perfect size.
I do, too.
If they really gotta make it a half an inch bigger, okay, fine, but I think that it's really the perfect size.
Yeah.
And I say that just because, like, you can operate it with one hand if you want, and much bigger and you can't.
But yes, I like how Jamie pointed out that this was some artist who drew a picture.
Literally just, The good news is my wife and I are both going to upgrade our phones when the new one comes out. The bad news is we're both going to upgrade our phones when the time comes.
When the new one comes out.
That's going to be a little expensive. Yeah.
Well, you know what, Jamie? We'll what I don't know. I mean, depending on the specs of this new iPhone, you might just look at the 5S.
You could get the Edge.
You could get the 5S for $100 and...
You sign yourselves both up on the Edge plan, right? Then you're just paying like, $30 a month extra for the phone. But the Edge plan is like $40 for unlimited voice and text. And then your shared pool of data, you know, $40 for a gig, $50 for two, $60 for four, seven, or so, I forget. Anyway, and that's shared data between the two phones. So I don't know how if that would save you anything or not versus, you know, getting into another two-year contract.
Yeah, right. Well, I'll have to check that out because that would be good to know.
But WWDC is not until June. We're not going to know anymore. So let the rumors continue.
Well, it's not going to really matter much to the rest of us anyway, since like tickets will sell out in a minute and a half this year.
Right.
And yet again, that means blind people are not going to be going unless they work for a company that's buying the tickets.
But you can listen to coverage right from the front page of iBlink Radio because we last year just linked to Leo LaPorte's coverage.
Yeah, that was great.
It was great. And I get that they have to talk. I mean, that's part of what they do. They're commentating.
Oh, the Twit people.
But they really kind of went. Actually, it wasn't the WWDC. It was the fall event.
It was the iPhone.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. They just blabbered on,
they did.
Didn't they?
I will probably watch it from my Apple TV this year. That might be
Fun. That was really nice. I really appreciated that.
Of course, I realize there are some visual things you miss, but...
Oh, of course.
I'll just catch live blogs while I'm watching
it.
But speaking of our iPhones, hey, they finally fixed the calendar. Well, that fixed it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. You can now get there's a list button. It will let you see... just your events.
Yes.
And there's another thing they did, buddy. And you and I talked about this on the last podcast, and that's how you can control Siri.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really like this.
You know what's really funny is that I've actually been sort of doing this anyway for a while because sometimes Siri would cut me off before I was done.
Yeah.
Yes. Or if you're in a noisy room.
Right.
Then she just keeps listening.
So they finally just made it official. Like you have to hold down the button while you're talking to her, and then when you let go, she'll know you're done. Sort of like the push to talk on a radio.
Right, yeah. I really appreciated knowing that this was actually possible, because I'm usually in the situation where I'm talking, and then I finish my question or my statement, and then there are other people in the room who are also talking, so then she just keeps listening.
Yeah.
No, stop. Stop listening.
Oh, it's
listening.
So funny. Alina talks to Siri.
Yeah.
And asks her stuff. Siri, do you have a pet? I don't, but I was going to get a Tribble once, or a few.
Awesome. Oh,
that's cute. I asked Siri the other day if she could make the weather warmer, and she said, I'm afraid not. It was just spontaneous, too. I was just like, because it was like, it had been beautiful out, and the next day was going to be cold. I was like, can you make it warmer?
Right.
I'm afraid not.
I'm just afraid that funny. I can't do that. I want her to say, I'm afraid I can't do that, Jamie.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And it should be with a creepy voice.
It should. Yeah. That would be funny if they just, instead of Samantha, if that's who you use, or Karen, if they really did insert the howl voice in there.
Yes. I'm sorry, Jamie.
Oh, wow.
I can't do that.
At one point, I think Alina must have told her iPad, hi, my name's Alina, I'm 13 years old. Because now it says, I'm sorry, only I'm 13 years old.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, Whoops. Only I'm 13 years old. She needs to tell her my name is Alina again.
Yeah, that's what I told her.
Yeah.
So she says, hi, I'm Alina, I'm 13 years old. Like... No. You just
She's
say,
gonna get that in there one
Alina.
Way or the other.
That's awesome. Yeah.
It is awesome.
Well, coming up after the break, we're gonna have your letters, eye reports, comments,
fast food,
and so
chocolate.
Much more. Chocolate. Yes.
And after we have chocolate, we'll go for a walk.
Oh,
and then we're gonna go look for old cell phones.
Yes.
Right here on Sarah Talk 192.
0.168. 0.1.1.
Psst, Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon? Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk 192, and the mailbag is sad. It has a sad face. It's okay, mailbag, because Ricky and Joe are both gone. They're both at CSUN. Which, by the way, thank you, Hims, Inc., for sponsoring this year's CSUN coverage. We really appreciate that. You know, mailbag was supposed to go to CSUN, and I think that Joe and Ricky just both got so busy that I think they forgot it, honestly, and left mailbag behind. But it's okay because I have some treats here for mailbag. And
mailbag treats. What do mailbags like for treats?
Well, letters, of course.
Yes, letters. Chocolate letters. Lots of, We got lots of good reports this week. Buddy actually left an iReport, which we will listen to right now.
Hi, this is Buddy Brandon calling for the Sarah Talk podcast. And commenting on the couple weeks ago when somebody left a message in the mailbag about Thin Mint Girl Scout cookies and how grasshoppers are the exact same thing as the Girl Scout Thin Mint cookie. While I do not have both of them to make a side-by-side comparison, I believe I can safely say the following, because I do have in front of me a Ziploc baggie containing... Now 5 was before 6 grasshopper cookies made by the Keebler elves. And I have one right here, which I'm going to take a bite out of, like this. And I can safely say that these are very close to actual Thin Mint cookies, but they're not exact. In fact, the Thin Mint cookies, I believe, are a bit mintier than are the grasshopper cookies. The grasshopper cookies, however, are a decent substitute if you cannot get the real thing. If you can get the real thing, however, I recommend that you do so, because not only are they mintier, but they support the Girl Scouts. So, go and find Girl Scouts and like get cookies from them. Although, if you do so, don't write a check. Thank you. Goodbye.
That's awesome. Eating a cookie on an iReport is something I would not have thought of, but hey, it works, man.
Yeah, it was, you know, I was taking a cue from the Nons edition
of the Keebler Elves grasshopper cookie.
Yes, the Keebler, it's not the same as the Girl Scout cookie. I do think the Girl Scout cookie is a bit mintier, but, you know, pretty decent. Indeed. I like them.
Yeah. Just don't look at the ingredients list on either of them.
No.
Whatever well, you do.
No, if that, you ever think that the Girl Scout cookies are baked in somebody's bakery or whatever, uh-uh.
No, not so much. Next up, we have an iReport, a very interesting iReport from Cherokee Eagle, talking about hair color and some other things.
Skin color.
Hi, this is Cherokee Eagle, and I've been listening to podcast number 191. And the iReport left concerning hair color and the way people sound. I don't know if you can tell this or not, but I actually have golden brown hair. Actually, it's more like, it's kind of a light brown. It's not really blonde anymore. It used to be when I was a child. But I've never thought in terms of hair color, but this made me think about my secret study, if you will, of skin color based on someone's sound. And this is not meant to be, this is observations, nothing more. But there was a study I heard about, and maybe someone at Serotek can actually find the study. But studies have been done that show, for example, African-American people who tend to have darker skin are also born with longer vocal cords. And that's just another physical characteristic of different races, is that the vocal cords are different. And I've made a point to notice this, that different races, and even among different European races, the voices are just a little bit different. And I do a thing where I will make a mental guess as to when I hear someone who's African-American speak, if they are really dark or maybe they're lighter skinned. And I base part of this on experiences with some of my own cousins who are biracial. And basically, someone who has really dark skin will tend to have a deeper voice. And this is just, again, another physical characteristic, not meant to be a racial remark at all, but a physical characteristic. Whereas I'm mostly European, so I tend to have a little bit less of a deep voice. My mother isn't deep, but she has a little bit deeper voice than I do, and she also has darker skin than I do. She has more American Indian blood than I do, and I have extremely fair skin. So there is a little bit of a science to it, is my point. There is a little bit of a science to it, not maybe necessarily tied to hair color, except that, you know, maybe darker skinned folks generally tend to have darker hair.
And, you know, I actually have to agree. Let's be honest. There are times that you can tell that you're talking to someone from a particular race, whether it be Caucasian or African-American, or it's not 100%.
No.
No one would ever claim that it is, but there are.
And I don't ever make the judgment call when I'm talking person.
No, never.
Because I have gotten it wrong.
Right.
Gotten it wrong, and it's not terribly important to me.
No, it's not really not.
No.
No.
And really, it's like, usually you can tell by accent whether.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Usually, but not always.
I freaked a girl out once.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally. I've met some white folks that have a more stereotypically black accent.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yeah.
And vice versa. Yeah. And so it's like, you know, what bothers me is when, you know, you find black folks that say, what, are you trying to sound white, or vice versa? It's like, no, this is just the way people talk. And there's nothing wrong with speaking English properly. And there's nothing consequently wrong with speaking in the way that you grew up or whatever.
Yep. It's just how you talk.
Yeah. But as far as like voice pitch, that's interesting. I'd never thought of that.
I hadn't either.
You know, somebody should do a study on that. Somebody commission a study. I'm sure we can get some grant money.
Sure.
Yeah.
Jamie, what were you going to say about freaking out a girl, though?
When I was in college, I met a girl who had no trace of a Southern accent at all.
Okay.
But I could tell by the inflections in her voice that she had been from the South. And it turns out that she was from Virginia originally.
Oh,
and she
okay.
was completely blown away that I picked up on that. Because, like I said, she did not have any Southern drawl of any kind, but definitely that musical quality, because people from the Midwest tend to have a bit more flat and in some cases nasal quality.
Right.
But no, hers was just very musical and she was surprised.
With my non-sighted friends, we play the I can tell how much that person weighs game.
Ooh, that's fun.
But it's not like an exact number. We don't play that game. We play the I can tell if that person is kind of heavy or if they're really thin or even how tall they are. And that seems to be pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Because your voice really just changes depending on your height and your weight. It just does.
It does. Yep.
So
it does.
Sorry to be the burden of reality for the sighted community, but often actually tell based on your voice. Yep.
Hey guys, Derek here, just with an impromptu I report, agreeing that there is a strong correlation between certain vocal characteristics and a person's weight, ethnic background, place of origin, etc. But I thought I'd show you something fun. And it's the production tools that allow you to change some of those vocal characteristics. For example, you may have had an idea about my weight, but then again, maybe you have absolutely no clue as to how much I really weigh. And in terms of age, well, you know,
that's something some of you may be wondering about as well.
Of course there's a strong possibility you just don't really care.
And the equally strong possibility that if you don't care, you're a meanie head. Of course, calling someone a meanie head sounding like this is just a little amusing in my opinion, but anyway, that's all I've got.
Finally, we have an iReport from Mr. Patrick Perdue on a rotary phone.
This is
funny.
This is awesome.
I love this.
It is.
Thank you, Patrick.
The fact
Take
that
it
he
away.
Still has... Yes, thank you. The fact that he still has the phone that he learned to dial on in 1974 is more impressive than the actual demonstration, in my opinion.
The thing that I think is funniest, though, is that he connected this like ancient telephone to a voiceover IP phone adapter, which is just the funniest thing ever.
I love it.
Hello, Serotalk Podcast. This is Patrick Perdue. Some may know me, some may not. It's too bad if you don't, because I'm just that awesome. Or something. Anyway, I'm calling in regard to a comment made on Serotalk Podcast 191 with rotary phones, and I'm calling the blab line from a rotary phone. This is actually a General Electric rotary phone, very plastic, purchased sometime around 1979. This was actually the first rotary phone that I used. This was the phone that I learned how to dial phones on when I was a kid. So, one, two, three, four, five, and so on and so forth. I'm calling over an ATA, analog telephone adapter. So the pulses don't quite sound right for those who can count pulses. For example, here's a zero. It won't quite sound right. That's new technology for you, just totally screwing things up for the rest of us. And making that good old stuff that worked for ages not work so well anymore. Anyway, that's all I've got. Bye-bye.
That's so funny. I haven't used a rotary phone since I was a child.
I haven't.
Long time.
Wow. Yeah. I think the last rotary phone I used was like one of those AT&T trimline phones that had, you know, has the dial in the handset.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
my favorite thing is that the Oregon, I kid you not, the Eugene Office of the Oregon Commission for the Blind's little message still says, if you're on a rotary phone, please wait until the end of this message. And my brain just goes, what?
Like, yeah.
Is this something
Anybody
we're really,
really
concerned about?
Has this message that, you know, one of those messages that says, if you're calling from a rotary phone, please hang up. Go to a phone store and buy a touch tone phone.
Yes. It is 2014. Why do you have a rotary phone?
Especially when you can get a touch tone phones are like if you wanted a desk phone, you can get one for next to nothing, man.
Right.
Right.
I know. Well, and what it begs the question is like, oh gosh, now I've said that nobody should own a rotary phone, and the next thing I'll know is that hipsters have decided that that's the next big thing.
It's the next cool thing, yeah.
Yeah.
And then they're going to complain, why doesn't it work on my DSL line? Right? Or whatever.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
The last story I heard, I want a rotary phone. You do?
Yeah.
Sure. Why not?
Why not?
The last story I heard was of a group of people that have decided to churn their own butter. And that was just,
oh, wow.
I did that by accident once.
Well, sure, but that's because you over-whipped your whipping cream.
Exactly. That's exactly what I did. I was making whipped cream for a chocolate mousse.
Right.
And I had my...
And you over-whipped
my mead, my beater, and I over-whipped it, and it made some nice butter. So I, you know, added some salt and drained off all the liquid and added some salt. And
nice.
Stirred it up, and we had nice homemade butter for the rolls. And then I had to get another thing of whipping cream to make whipped cream. Whipping cream. It was all good.
So, buddy, here's the thing, though. They're using actual butter churns.
Oh, well, okay. That's just weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes hours and a lot of flavor. And
I'm sure it does. And because I'm, you know, you don't just do it in a little pint sized amount. They use giant things. And yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
So, apparently, if you want to get all old school, you can go buy yourself a butter churn.
Well, we've got lots of emails as well, and we'll put those in the show notes. You can go read those and check out what our listeners, you, our listeners, have to say. Things about growing up Fisher and all kinds of other interesting discussions right there in the show notes. Resources@sarotalk.com is the email address. Go to www.sarotalk.com. Check out the show notes. Leave a blog comment. Follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/Sarotalk. Leave an iReport on iBlink Radio on your iOS or Android device, or call the Blab Line, 866-997-2522. It's time now for Roundabout.
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 Roundabout. Roundabout. Roundabout.
How about roundabout. Chocolate fried chicken, buddy? What do you think about
this
that?
This just sounds nasty.
Yes, it does.
I don't even understand. Why would you ruin chocolate with fried chicken?
You know what really stood out for me in this article was how it said, like, food forward thinking communities like San Francisco, Los Angeles, and New York. And my first thought was, no, those are all like wacko communities, because they always do these wacko things like this crap.
Well, you guys heard about Watson and his one of his new roles, right? No?
No. Okay. No.
Watson is now working with a chef at a food cart in Las Vegas. And basically what they do is they tell Watson, come up with our next idea. He then creates a random recipe based on like some parameters, and then they make it. It doesn't even matter how weird it is, but Watson is designing your food.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I can hear it now. Your next meal designed by computer.
Yes.
The restaurant of the future.
Well, I'm, you know, honestly, as somebody who doesn't really enjoy cooking, I just, actually, what I don't enjoy is the process of figuring out what the heck I'm going to eat.
I know.
I think
I hate that
is the thing that I struggle with every single day of my life. And I know, again, it's very silly, but I would love to have a replicator, because it could mean that I would go up to it, I would say, this is what I want, and then it would just appear.
That would be awesome.
I know.
But I would not order chocolate fried chicken. I don't know. I'd have...
No!
Like this thing would have to just be amazing for me to change my mind here, because it just sounds just totally gross.
Let me be clear. I really enjoy mole sauce. That is very different from chocolate fried chicken.
Yeah.
Why?
I will not be doing this thing. Nope. Nope.
Well, let's say you actually ordered your chocolate fried chicken, which I don't want to even think about how many calories that would be.
What was it? Mashed potatoes with like white chocolate gravy, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, exactly.
God.
Yes. We should also mention that because of climate change, where we're going to grow our chocolate, if we're going to be able to grow our chocolate, is actually a question. So maybe we should be pontificating over whether or not we could have chocolate fried chicken.
I don't believe in it.
If you ordered it and your calories ended up being thousands, probably.
You could go for a walk using your vibrating shoes.
Yes.
Yes, you could.
I was going to say, though, like, if you found yourself really foggy in the head after you ate all those calories, you could just go for a walk.
And you're with your vibrating insoles. Now, does chicken also have the tryptophan like turkey has? Does it make you sleepy?
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think so either.
No.
No, carbohydrates is what makes you sleepy. So if you ingested too many carbs and you found yourself kind of lazy or not feeling so great, you should go for a walk because it will not only get your heart rate up and make you healthier overall, it actually helps with memory. So that's what this article is talking about.
So what if you forget to go for your walk then?
Possibility.
Well, then, buddy, maybe you should have
you
gone
got problems,
anyway.
Right?
Yeah. I actually am one of those people that really doesn't feel good when I don't have enough physical exercise. There are definitely days when I get into this mode of my brain is starting to really slow down and I'm feeling out of it. And I just grab the dogs and we go. Because it doesn't even matter how far the walk is or how long it is. I just need to start moving because my brain is no longer functional. So I really appreciated this article. I think it's very true that walking actually does boost your brain power. It improves the amount of oxygen going to your brain. So it's really just nonsensical that you would think that going for a walk is actually helpful to you. I found it both a good reminder and a duh kind of moment seeing this headline.
Yeah.
Well, you know, buddy, there are times that you want to walk and then there are times you want to run.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
A young girl recently, she didn't run. She did something a lot better than that, actually.
She did. She was at home by herself and somebody broke into her house and was robbing stuff from her. And she remembered that someone taught her in school a couple of weeks before that, that you can use any cell phone, whether it's
any
active or not,
phone.
Yep.
To call 911.
Right.
And so she had a deactivated cell phone and she called and she said, my house is being robbed. And somebody told me that, and they said, oh, is it so-and-so? Because that's who you're talking to. And she said, it was. And
yeah.
So it was really cool. And well, the first thing that sprung to my mind is, geez, how far we've come. Because, you know, it wasn't that long ago that a kid at home alone would pick up the house phone and dial 911. But we don't have house phones anymore. Everybody's got a cell phone, even if it's an unactivated one. This reminds me of another article that I saw not 2 days before I saw this one about a two-year-old.
Oh, I saw that.
Yeah, the mom and the kids were out out having a walk, and a dog attacked mom. And the mom told the older kid, call 911, call 911. The kid's like, ew, no, this phone's all covered with blood. I'm not touching it. No. And so the two-year-old took the phone, wiped it off, and FaceTimed mom's friend. This kid likes to FaceTime, apparently.
Yeah.
And FaceTimed mom's friend. And mom's friend heard the screaming and everything, called 911, saved mom's life.
Wow.
Two-year-old. FaceTime. It was awesome.
Wow.
The only time I've ever talked to a 911 operator was when I was growing up and I thought somebody was in my house. So I had hidden myself in my closet. I was terrified. What had happened was that our phone lines had gone wonky and somebody was actually, I was hearing somebody else's conversation through my phone line.
Yeah.
But it sounded like they were in my house. And so then the worst thing of it was that. So like the worst thing about it was that the police officer, of course, came to my house and then I had to leave my closet because I had to go answer the door. And I'm like, all right, because the 911 operator said, oh, well, the police officer's there. He needs you to come out, ma'am. And I'm thinking, are you freaking kidding me?
My wife and I were just hanging out one evening at home and a police officer came to our door and asked us literally and just asked us if everything was all right. And we were like, well,
what? That happened to me
until you showed up. A squirrel had chewed through the phone line and it had dialed. I mean, 911 had been dialed. It had triggered.
Oh, no.
Oh, wow.
So
I was just laying in bed. I was talking to a friend of mine on the telephone and hear this knock on my door. This was almost 20 years ago by now. And get up. I'm like, who is it? It's the police. I'm like, the police? Says, yeah, it's the police. I open the door. What can I do for you, officer? He says, is everything all right? I say, yeah. He said, well, we got a call that there was some disturbance going on here. Are you sure everything's fine? I say, yeah, everything's fine. I was just laying in bed. Well, whatever's going on in here, keep it down. Okay.
Okay. Sure, officer.
Yeah, all right.
No problem.
But the only other... I have, unfortunately, had to call 911 before, you know, for Melanie. But one time, I picked up the phone and I hit redial This was a couple days after I had to call 911. I picked up the phone and hit redial, and apparently on that handset was the one I had called 911 on, and it dialed 911.
Wow.
But I hung up after it dialed, right after it dialed the third digit, and
no!
They called me back, and they're like, I'm like, yeah, I'm sorry. I accidentally hit redial, and I had called 911 a couple days ago. I didn't really mean to. It was fine.
Yeah.
It was like, oh, crap. It doesn't take any time for that thing to go through.
Wow. So one of the things I really like, I haven't, of course, used it because I haven't needed to, but on your lock screen of your iPhone, there is a button that says emergency. So,
really?
Yeah.
I've only seen that.
It's if you have the passcode. So if your fingerprint scanner doesn't work for some reason, when the passcode thing pops up, there's a button that says emergency.
Oh, okay. That's when I've seen that.
And it's actually really great because if you're in an emergency situation and somebody grabs your phone so they can call 911, they're not going to have your passcode or your fingerprint.
Right.
It's really great that it's right there. We had a gentleman on our bus last Friday who had a seizure, and our bus driver took care of it. But I'm really glad that we were in a situation where getting access to 911 services was just immediate.
Right.
It was really traumatic. I haven't witnessed somebody having a seizure in a very, very long time, and it was very, very scary.
It is a very unsettling. I will agree with
that. Yeah. Thankfully, he was okay. He did hurt himself, but I think he'll be okay. Well, that does it for us, you guys.
It does. There isn't much we haven't covered this time around.
There sure isn't.
I'd like to thank everyone for listening. I'd like to thank Buddy and Alina for joining me this time around.
I'm happy to be here. I would rather be at CSUN, I'll be honest with you, because that would be so cool. But I'm really honored that I got to be invited back.
Well, keep listening to iBlink Radio, because right on the front page, you're going to find CSUN coverage soon, I hope. We'll be streaming from SPN Radio. And then, of course, we will do the show specials, as we always do. And you can download those and check out the show notes and all that good fun stuff. So lots of really interesting content coming between now and the end of – a lot of stuff coming between now and the end of the month, actually.
Yes.
And you should stay tuned after we're done yabbering, because Jamie Pauls is going to do a nice review of the Braille Edge 40.
Thank you all for listening. We will be back again next week. We will not have a podcast because we're going to just pretty much just give you CSUN wall to wall. But we'll be back
in
April with the group, with the default group, I think. So, thanks for listening, everyone. Take care and stay safe.
See y'all next time.
Hey, everyone. This is Jamie Pauls with the Serotalk Podcast Network. Today, I'm going to talk to you about a product that I've owned for just about a month now, and I'm really pleased with it. It's the Braille Edge from HIMS, Inc. The Braille Edge is a 40-cell refreshable Braille display. Aaron Edgar over at Tech Access Democast has done several in-depth podcasts on the Braille Edge, talking about exactly where all of the controls are and demonstrating using it on the web and with your iPhone, that sort of thing. So I'm not going to go into great detail here. I'm just going to give you my personal thoughts, and in doing so, I will describe the unit a little bit. But this is definitely my impressions more than an in-depth review. I originally had a full-featured note taker, the $6,000 variety, that did all kinds of nice things, a lot of which I found myself not using, to be honest. I used the word processing functions of it, I used the calculator, I did use the calendar some in conjunction with my iPhone, but a lot of the things that you could do with the really high-priced note taker, I was not making use of. So when it came time for me to get a new unit, when my old one finally wore out, I was really interested in the Braille Edge. I had looked at it at convention a couple of times, and from the reading that I had done and from what I heard from other people, this looked like a really good option. And so far, I am quite pleased with my decision. The Braille Edge is small, and it just feels sleek. That's the only word I know to use. It's not a unit that I would throw down a flight of stairs carelessly and be confident that it was going to work when I got to the bottom of it. Because it's small and because it is fairly lightweight, just a couple of pounds, not quite, you know, you're going to give up some ruggedness, if that's a word, some durability. But it is definitely, if you know how to take care of your equipment, if you are responsible with it, I believe that it is quite satisfactory and will serve well. It's 310 by 101.5 by 22 millimeters. I'm going to put that at about a foot long, about 3 inches wide from front to back, and about an inch tall. That is, by the way, with it in its Executive Braille Products case. The case that comes with the unit from HIMSS is the case that you might expect. Actually, it kind of resembles a flute case, interestingly enough. It's soft cover, but it hangs on your body long ways, so the unit is hanging down your side. But when you get the Executive Products case, it is very typical of what you would expect from any note taker case that you've seen from them. You can use the note taker or use the Braille display in the case, which you cannot do with the case that you get from him. So I would use the case until I could get a hold of the Executive Products case. That is my own personal recommendation. Once you get it installed in that case, it is ready to go, and you can take it anywhere you want, safely and with satisfaction that it's going to be in good shape. The Braille is crisp, as you might expect. It has a very good feel under the fingers. The keyboard is quiet, and it's not one of those keyboards that you really have to pound on. And you know what I'm talking about. If you've used note takers for very long at all, and certainly many of us have used the old Perkins Braillers, you really kind of have to hammer on those. When you get your Braille Edge, you may find that you kind of need to continually tell yourself to back off just a little bit and not be quite so aggressive. The keys are comfortable feel. They don't feel squishy. They don't feel like they are strange to the touch. They have the spring in them that you would expect them to have, but they are quiet and they don't require a lot of pressure to press. The battery is about 20 hours life, so they say. To be honest, I've never even come close to running it down. One of the really nice things about this unit is that not only can you charge it with the AC adapter that you get, but you can also charge it via USB when it's hooked up to your computer. So if it's just being used as a Braille display, it's charging while you're using it at the computer. Great feature. Also, it's Bluetooth capable. At this time, I have not yet paired it with my iPhone or any other device. I have used it, the note-taking capabilities, and I have used it at the computer as a Braille display. Works with pretty much any screen reader that you're going to use, certainly System Access via Bluetooth. It works with WindowEyes, JAWS, NVDA, VoiceOver, all of those that you would expect. Check the website, hims-inc.com. If you have any questions about your particular screen reader, but I think you're going to be in pretty good shape. So whether your screen reader uses USB, Bluetooth, or both, they've got you covered. You can read and write in contracted Braille. Now, this includes, obviously, if you're writing a Braille file, that's kind of a no-brainer. You would certainly expect to be able to write in contracted Braille. If you are viewing a text file, and very often you are, or an RTF or DOC or DOCX file, you are certainly going to want to be able to read in contracted Braille. In the initial release of the Braille display firmware, it is my understanding that you could not read grade 2 Braille, nor could you write in grade 2 Braille with these files, but now you can. There's one slight caveat that I will point out, and that is that when you're searching in a non-Braille file, as I'll call it, you sometimes may find problems finding what you're looking for. And I'll give you an example. I am reading a document right now that is divided into chapters. And when I read the Braille, I see contracted Braille, chapter with the ER sign at the end, as you would expect. When I do a search for the word chapter, I can put in any part of that word, the CH sign, APT, and it will locate the next occurrence of the word chapter. If I include the ER sign, dots 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, I am not able to find any text. I have tried using uncontracted Braille and doing a search, and that doesn't work because you're reading and writing in contracted Braille. So if I'm doing something wrong, I will stand corrected. I suppose you could go in and change whether you want to read and write in contracted Braille. You could make it all uncontracted if you needed to do a search, but that's a bit cumbersome, I suppose. So my suspicion is that there's perhaps a bit of a bug there that is not recognizing all contracted signs or braille contractions when you are in search mode. Again, if I'm incorrect about that, I will happily be corrected. There are many braille tables available. Right now, I see English braille. I do not see UEB listed in the braille tables that are available. I suspect that will change in the not too distant future. Along with being able to read and write documents, you can do a few other things, and that's one of the things that sets this device apart from many dedicated braille displays. You certainly have a clock function. Interestingly enough, you only have 24-hour time available to you. That's not really a problem as I see it, but it is something that you need to be aware of. If you are a fluent braille reader, one of the things that you know is that you want to be able to quickly move to the next display length, or what, if you were looking at paper, you would call the next line of text. And this is very easily accomplished on the Braille Edge, because at the far right and the far left of the Braille display are two capsule-shaped buttons, and you have two of these on each side of the unit. And they both do the same thing. So the bottom one is going to pan to the right one display length. The top one is going to pan to the left one display length. So regardless of what hand you're using to read Braille, or if you're using both hands, when you reach the end of a line or the end of the display, you can, if you just want to use your pinky and reach over there and tap the display on the right side, the button, you can certainly do that. If you want to use your left hand, go over and catch that button over on the left side, you can do that. So it's really easy to quickly move to the next display length. Also on each end of the unit is a ring of four navigation keys, up, down, left, and right. There's nothing in the center, so there's no enter button there. And again, this is on the right-hand side of the display and also on the left-hand side. So depending on where you are, what orientation you're at, you can easily move up, down, right, and left. And this is the way that you move through menus, and you can use the enter key, but certainly the right navigation key will open a menu item or a folder item, that sort of thing. So just doing things like file browsing, choosing options in the applications menu, like stopwatch or countdown timer or clock or whatever it is that you want to access, scheduler, you certainly can do that very easily. I have not yet worked with the scheduler a lot. I think I've entered one appointment, to be honest. I've set the date and time, that sort of thing. I have used the calculator, and all of these things are very easy to do, as you would expect. The thing I really like about this unit is that it is simple. It's very straightforward. It's not one of those things that have a lot of overwhelming commands that you have to kind of sift through and figure out what you really want to use and what you really have no need of. The functionality of the unit is simple. It's straightforward. It does what it does. And therefore, it's not difficult to learn the basics and even the more advanced features of this unit. A couple of things that I've noticed as I've used the device. If you are reading a relatively decent sized text file, and I know that's, I can't give you kilobytes or anything like that, but an example is that I started a document, I believe it was an RTF document that I saved it as, where I did some class notes. I teach a music appreciation class. And so I was doing a unit of study, and I started on the computer, and then I moved to the Braille display and was editing the document on the Braille display. And by that, I mean that I had transferred the file to an SD card and was actually using the Braille display to read and write the file, as opposed to working on the computer. I just wanted to make that clear. If you get a large enough text file, you can have some lockups. The unit will kind of lock up on you, and if you haven't saved your place, well, then guess what? You get to go back and retype your information. The good news is that if that happens to you, on the back of the unit, about, not quite midway, but close enough, on the back of the unit is a reset button. So when the unit is in the state that it's not doing anything at all, you just reach over, hit the reset button, then the braille kind of goes away and you need to hit the power button and it just comes on and it's all happy and friendly. And there's a nice little chime that you hear when it powers on and a nice little chime that you hear when it powers off. And everything is fine, except that you got to go back and retype your information. But that's my fault because I didn't save as regularly as I should. I've noticed a tiny little bit of that with a large braille file. But just for the sake of discussion, let's say 2 times in editing over the space of 3 or 4 hours, as opposed to maybe 4 times in that same length of time if I was using a text file or an RTF file or something like that. That's a little bigger. And I suspect some formatting issues were introduced when I brought that file into the Braille display / note taker, which brings up the point that when you save a document, so you bring up a docx file or an RTF file, anytime that you save that document, it's going to save as a text file. So you can't preserve formatting. Now, I personally don't find this to be a real problem because keep in mind this is primarily a Braille display. That's its purpose. That's its design. The fact that you can do other things with it is, in my opinion, an added bonus. You save everything to an SD card. It doesn't have internal memory that you save files to. So the point is, I think the fact that they call the writing application Notepad is significant. I think that's really what it's intended to be. If I make the decision to push that to its limits and use that a little bit more than perhaps it was intended, then I can expect to deal with any difficulties that I might find as I do that. But I do want you to be aware that you do need to realize it is not a full-on laptop or $6,000 note taker. As far as being able to multitask, you can't flip from one application to another. You need to close down whatever application you're in and move to the next application, that sort of thing. The only thing I would like to see different in this device, and not in the device itself, but in the packaging, actually, I believe that if a person wanted to obtain a Braille formatted manual, it seems to me that that would be a good thing for Hims to offer or, you know, contract out to someone else to offer. When you're dealing with a Braille display, you have absolutely no speech. So when it comes to things like, okay, how do I enter dates into the calendar? If you're listening with speech, that kind of gets a little bit lost on you. Yeah, you can do /DD/YYYY, and, you know, but that's fine. Is it computer Braille? Can I use contracted Braille? What format do I need to use? When I'm using the calculator, I mean, it does tell you that you need to use computer Braille, and it very meticulously spells out all the dot combinations in the text file that you're looking at or the Word file. And that's fine. That serves the purpose. But I think if a person just had a really good, well-formatted Braille manual, if they're a fluent Braille reader, they're probably going to be if they have a Braille display. And even if it didn't come at no charge, even if you had to purchase it for a fee, I would personally be willing to do that. Now, obviously, someone says, well, can't you just bring it up on your Braille display and read it? Yeah, you can. But what happens sometimes is that you can get into the situation where you're reading something and you ask yourself, okay, is this formatting because that's the way the writers of the manual intended me to input this information? Or is the Braille translation software in the unit just formatting this line of text this way, but that might not be exactly the way that it's supposed to be entered? So I don't want to get in the weeds with that, but if you follow my logic, there are times that you just really want to know exactly what was intended with no question of any Braille translation errors or inconsistencies at all. So again, I'm the guy that bought the hard copy of the Getting Started with Mavericks guide. So I was willing to do that. I would be willing to pay for the hard copy of the Braille Edge manual. Yes, it does come with a quick reference guide, kind of a small little, very simplified document that gets you started, but it definitely, the quick in the quick reference is apt. I think if you wanted a more in-depth manual in Braille, you would need to either bring it up on the display or, as I say, have it available on request. At $2,995, that is not throwaway money by any means. But as far as Braille displays are concerned, that is very reasonably priced, I believe. I would say that I am extremely pleased with the unit. This is version 1.1. I'm sure that the developers have many things in store for the future. I am anxious to see what they are able to add to the unit. Not that I lack anything, but I'm one of those people who always likes to know what's coming down the road and always looks forward to more. I've often said that we as blind people, when we get technology, because it's accessible and because it's usable, you know, it may start out being a braille display, but eventually we want it to be able to interface with our coffee makers that are touchscreen sensitive and our washer and dryer. So we're never happy or we're never satisfied with the status quo. We want more. That's always going to be the case. But this is an excellent unit. It does what it's supposed to do. It works as advertised. It is easy to carry around, easy to use, and I'm glad that I am the proud owner of a Braille Edge 40. And by the way, I have been using notes that I typed up on the Braille Edge to bring you this product review. Be sure to visit www.sarahtalk.com, and in the show notes, you'll find links to the Hims Inc. website where you can learn about the Braille Edge. And also you'll find links to Aaron Edgar's podcasts on using the Braille Edge where you can get a lot more information than I gave you right here. For the Sarahtalk Podcast Network, I'm Jamie Pauls.
If you found this review useful, or if you wish to contribute your own review, let us know by sending an email to resources@sarahtalk.com. Send us a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. Or send us an iReport on iBlink Radio.